This is Eric Rutan of Cannibal Corpse. You are listening to the Scars and Guitars podcast with Andrew McKay Smith.
G'day, everybody. I hope you are well. Welcome to the show. So glad you can join me for a chat with the extraordinarily charismatic Lena, who is the vocalist in Moldova's Infected Rain. Throughout the conversation, we discuss her time aboard the 2024 edition of 70,000 Tons of Metal, the cruise that I was also on. She also shares her insights on Australian audiences, which is important because that's a catalyst for our chat. The September 2024 shows with Cradle of Filth across Australia, so there you go. Lena also talks about her hopes and aspirations for the future alongside many other topics. In particular, she reflects on her experiences living under the hammer and in the shadow of socialism in the Soviet Union. So here she is, Lena from Infected Rain. This isn't the first time I've been in proximity to you. I was on 70,000 Tons of Metal, and I think I shared a link with you a few times. Yeah, there you go.
That's awesome.
How did you find that?
It had a lot of ups and downs for musicians, to be honest. The time we had there was great. Hello. You have special guest today.
Nice.
Hello, Nessa. Hello. Say hello.
Hello.
Here she is.
Oh. A Scottish Terrier? It looks like an Australian Terrier, actually, but it's a...
Mini Schnauzer.
Aha, it is too. Yes, a Schnau, we call it. My mate's got one. We call it a Schnau.
Yes. Hey, baby. Leave the plant alone. She loves the plant.
Oh, that's
cool. Yes, getting back to your question, it had a lot of ups and downs when it comes to, you know, instruments, where they were, how we received them, when we received them. We had some difficulties with the shows because of that. And it was completely things that were not in our power to fix. A lot of people were trying to help us, but it wasn't as organized as you would at least see, you know, on a festival, where this is a festival, you know, you have so many bands, you have to have everything under control in a way. But unfortunately, you know, first show we couldn't find our instruments, and our bass player had to borrow a different bass from another band. Our drummer didn't have even his own snare drum. Our guitar player received his guitar 10 minutes before our showtime. 10 minutes. We had no sound check, no way to see if everything's okay, because up until the almost till the end, everybody was looking for our instruments. So stress. We thought we are not going to play. And in fact, there was another band on a different stage that had the same situation, and they refused to play.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't just us.
Which band was that?
Equilibrium, I believe.
Okay, right. That's, the company that runs 70,000 Tons of Metal, they're German, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know, but I've heard that it was their first year working with this specific company of the this specific vessel. So basically, they would always have the same people they are working with. And on this year, the people that were working on the cruise from the, ship company, I don't know how it works, I'm going to call it that way, were not aware at all of the festival needs and vice versa. So they were all sending us constantly to each other, which is a lot of floors, a lot of things to understand. Not all the elevators go that way and stuff like that. And it was a chaos the first day, and we played the first day. Now, when we had to perform the second time, it was also insane because our showtime was very late. I never in my life played at 4:30 a.m.
I know. Exactly. I saw Carnation at 5:30 or something, and it was like, well, this is an experience.
It is very difficult for a musician to perform at that hour, first of all. Second of all, we had a lot of technical issues on that specific stage. For example, I went on stage and I only said one word And then my wireless system turns down and I sing two songs without hearing myself, my bandmates, barely hearing something from the PA and hoping and praying that I'm in the right spot. For two songs, they were figuring it out. So it was very difficult, very stressful, very. Honestly, for us, our experience as musicians, as performance as an old performance, I think it was definitely some of my worst performance in a lot of years. And it wasn't the fault of, you know, anybody, people. It was just, you know, of course, at 4:30 a.m., the crew that works all day long, even if they have shifts, it's tired. No one should work at 4 a.m. It should be an after party, I don't know, some electronic music or I don't know. I did not understand that. I get the whole vibe of this is nonstop music. I get it. But it was insanely difficult for musicians. How can you share your art with people when the conditions are like this, you know? It's hard.
Yeah.
We did our best, you know, we did our best. We did what we could, of course.
Well, there's proof of that online through the videos that was the only, there's a couple of points that you raised there. Yes, I did notice the German media crew were absolutely lovely. No comments otherwise around that, but I did notice that they were getting flustered at a lot that wasn't quite going right. And as a consequence, they weren't able to adapt very quickly. That's what I noticed because I was waiting around in some cases for a couple of hours, or I think when I say a couple of hours, it was an indeterminate period of time that felt like a couple of hours. There you go. For some bands to turn up. I know some bands like Catatonia just refused to do interviews. God knows what happened there.
There you go. That's definitely something that was not worked right, because we were asked if we wanted to join like an excursion, and then we didn't ask for it. It was awesome. We accepted it, of course. Obviously they do that because people want to have this experience with the musicians. So obviously they want to raise their sales and everything, but we as musicians, we had no instructions where to go, what to do, and in the like they barely even found our names. And I was like, look, I don't have to do this. I will not do this. It's totally fine. But like, I was given a schedule. Musicians had schedules, you know, of what to do. The only absolutely amazing, hands down experience that we had on 70K was the early album listening. We never had anything like that before. Yeah. Our album time was coming out in February. And while being on a cruise, we shared it with fans, I believe, almost 2 weeks before the release or something like that. So it was very exciting because it was this close, but not there yet. And you get to listen to it with people. But also, again, things were not super organized. No one really told you what to do. And I didn't know, was I supposed to speak or not? Will there even be a microphone? I didn't know anything. We just figured it out in the spot. And I feel like when you do things yourself or when you do things out of enthusiasm, you can figure it out. But that was an actual professional, quite expensive experience for many people that came to see the shows. So we also want to give them a good, expensive experience as musicians. And it was very hard.
Well, you given
when I say expensive, I don't mean a specific number. I mean quality, like, you know, when something looks or sounds or tastes like exquisite, I guess.
Were you given the opportunity, though, to provide feedback at any stage formally? I'm not talking about, oh, how are you going, that sort of thing. Were you actually sent an email or was management asked, how'd we do?
How did 70K do?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Of course, we had to share this experience with our management and you know, but we discovered that, again, this was the experience of every single band on the ship, every single band. You know, a member of our label was on the ship as well. He was so helpful. Big love to him, Meek. He is also a musician in a band and he happened to be there with his band, but he was working all the time to help us out. And it wasn't his first time. He played on this specific festival multiple times. So everybody who played multiple times and came back, and everybody who visited for the multiple times and came back as listeners, everybody said that it was really bad this year somehow for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been great to talk to you actually on there. I saw you and I didn't want to bug you because I saw you were punished by a few people a fair bit. So the fans grab on. No, I'm not saying they grab onto you physically, but oh my God, it's Lena, this sort of thing. I saw that was happening quite a bit.
It was happening. I am very humble and very simple person. So it is very touching when people actually, you know, look up to you and they are very happy to see you. I give them the opportunity to talk, to take a photo, no problem, as long as everybody is civil and respectful. Because sometimes, especially in environments like festivals or, you know, vacation or, shows or whatever, people go there to relax and have the extra drink or have the extra courage for something, and there are some unpleasant situations. I try to always give a chance to a person to say, you know, their hellos and take a photo if they want to. And you know, if it turns out that it's more negative and uncomfortable for me, I just, you know, try to politely leave.
How do you deal with drunk people?
I don't. I'm actually not a big fan of drunk people. I do drink alcohol myself, but I love the process. I drink it for the pairing with food. I drink it for a unique taste to add to, you know, to the palate. So I sip on it. I take my sweet time. I don't ever drink to get drunk, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people can say, okay, nobody really drinks to get drunk. It just happens. I try not, like, I don't go over, like a glass of wine is to enjoy and stuff like that. And I invite people to learn to balance their, their weaknesses, because we all have our weaknesses, you know. Sweets, coffee, alcohols, other substances, whatever your addiction is, you know, we all have our own addictions. We all have our own likes. We all have what we don't like. Just a good balance, it's the best. So the reason I'm saying that is I actually had really bad experience in my past, some family stories. And I was always like quite terrified by drunk people growing up. I learned that I shouldn't be, because it's just, you know, it's the same person. It's just his mind is clouded, or hers, right? And but I don't feel comfortable in the company of people that don't have control on their own behavior. So I try to think about it this way. Everybody is responsible for their own behavior. And unpredictable behavior can be dangerous. And when you overdo it, you are unpredictable. So I try to stay away from situations like this, to be honest.
You've got a very distinctive look, but you're also very charismatic. You're a woman, and you also come from a country that's not necessarily associated with certainly I know there are metal bands that come from there, but not a lot, if you know what I'm saying. It's a bit like Australia. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are a few that are prominent, but not too many. And if I'm not mistaken, you're the most prominent Moldovan band probably ever. So
in the metal industry, I think so. Yeah. Yes, in the metal industry. I mean, we have great musicians that are recognized on an international level. But I believe that in metal, we are the first band that made it where we are right now, and that are, accepted and listened in all the countries, really. And that's mainly thanks to internet, of course, because growing up, I am from the 80s. So growing up, like, no one had anything other than radio to listen to music and maybe go to some shows. So unless you listen to the radio station, you can't find out about bands.
Mm.
Right. So I'm very thankful for the era we live in. I feel like internet played a very big role, especially for a band from such a small country. And, you know, somehow yes, we toured and traveled a lot, but look at you, you know, we are talking, you are from Australia and we are talking thanks to internet. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been possible. And hopefully people that read or watch your interview are going to discover my band, and that would be great and amazing, you know, but that's not possible back then. So I don't know if that also played a big role. I'm pretty sure it did. But one of the biggest roles, unfortunately, when it comes to music in general, but specifically alternative music, is that there are no opportunities in that country. And that's why eventually people give up and they just stay content at a job that maybe they even love, you know, but it's not in the music industry. And, you know, they have families and they move on in different directions. So it's just very, very hard to survive as an alternative musician in such a small country with such poor economics. It really is. In fact, a good example that I want to share is this year we are playing in Moldova, and we haven't been playing in Moldova for 7 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We don't even play in our own country because there's no events. There's not such a big audience. And I don't know. I don't know. Or maybe... I don't know. Maybe with time this will change. I really hope so, because we have so many talented people and in the art industry. Like only the few I know, and I don't even live there anymore. I live in America for the past 9 years. But only the few that I know, remembered and or discovered through my musicians, are absolutely incredible, and they all deserve the chance to show their art somewhere else. You know.
Living in the US for 9 years then, and growing up under the hammer of Soviet rule in Moldova, do you find it, well, how do you find it seeing all of these youth that have only ever grown up in the relative wealth and prosperity of, you know where I'm headed? What's your perspective?
Yeah, I do know where you're headed. I got to say, before I answer your question, that every country is very unique. I've lived in other countries as well. This is country number four for me. It just so happened that way. My parents are, my father is Armenian, and my mom, even though she was born in Moldova, her parents' ethnicity is not Moldovan. So yes, you are right. I was actually born the year when everything was crashing, but it took a lot of years for the country to finally get out of the, you know, habits, the regulations. It takes years for people to even reconsider certain laws, and you know, it was very difficult. It was very difficult even up until even the beginning, the first, I would say, solid 4 to 5 years of our career up until then. The reason I say it was difficult is because, you know, you learn to be independent very fast, and you learn to know what to do in any situation all the time, no matter who you are and what career you choose. You can also do other things, because life teaches us that it's not an easy life. And it's most difficult because your parents actually lived with USSR, and their perspective of the reality is completely different than yours. You know what I'm saying? So we were the first generation to rebel, basically, and to have the, oh, I can wear all the colors I want, or I can be alternative. It is so difficult. Up until now, when I visit Moldova, I often find myself in unpleasant situations where I'm really judged openly in public. It's very... You don't feel safe ever, wherever you go, just because of how you look. You just don't feel safe. And it's been better and better with years. I'm gonna definitely recognize that. Last time I visited Moldova last year, I was very pleasantly surprised of how open-minded people are, and the youth that is now, you know, around is like tattooed, and it's just a form of expression. It's not necessarily because you are a drug addict, or you are, you know, a criminal that was in a jail, that you have tattoos. So I'm sure the generation, after at least younger 10 years than me, it feels a little bit easier growing up there. I love Moldova for many reasons. The nature, the people, there's a lot of beauty in that country. However, when my upbringing was quite rough, and that, unfortunately, that affects you. It affects you when you travel. You have your own perspective. You have your own reality where you're ready for everything and you know what to do in any situation. And then you take for granted that people around you are the same, but they are not, because they did not grow up like you. They did not have that type of upbringing. You know, it was completely different when I moved to Armenia. They've been through their own insanity throughout the history, starting with genocides and all the wars. The war that is still going on there. I was 13 when I left Armenia, so I only lived there for like 4 years, give or take, altogether. And then, my family moved to Italy, which is absolutely and completely different than Moldova or Armenia. So when I was a teenager, my family moved to Italy, and I had to experience a completely different culture, completely different language, completely different everything, you know. And I'm so grateful because I've learned from each culture a little bit, and I've tried to adapt my favorite things to my own life, and it makes me who I am now. But it is true that often I feel like an old person mentally, even with people my own age, and it's not in a good way, not in a wise, oh, that's a good thing, you're wise. No. Like when you had too many experiences in certain things and you already know certain things are a certain way, not because you invented that, just because the universe invented that, you know? So, but I tried to be very open-minded, and I think that living in different countries helped me actually accept people for their diversity, and, you know, and I just choose who I'm comfortable with, like we all do all the time. So in the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You can find people that think alike and people that you feel comfortable with in any country on the planet.
My father-in-law had to escape Croatia in the 60s, otherwise he would have been murdered because he was Catholic.
There you go.
And he was being chased, and he escaped through Italy, funnily enough. You mentioned Italy there. And what I find is that those that have had a direct experience, I had this view anyway beforehand, it just his stories aligned with my perspective, which is that a lot of these youth that have grown up in this the absolute abundance and prosperity of the West in the United States, Canada, Western Europe, New Zealand and Australia, especially the white kids, they seem to have this drive when they're politically and ideologically motivated. The key here is ideologically motivated, to somehow identify with Trotskyist and Marxist ideology. And they seem to view it as an abstract thing, but somebody like you or my father-in-law who lived under the hammer of this stuff, and I say to people, look, there's a reason why these fucking flags had a hammer and a sickle on them, because that's what you get.
Yeah.
That's what you cop.
It's quite sad, but it's the truth for sure. You know, the same, I don't even know the whole story, but my grandparents on my mom's side, their families escaped after Second World War. They were trying to find a peaceful country to raise their family. And that's where my grandfather and grandmother met, and they created their own family. But I don't even know much about it because not much was documented. My grandfather's ethnicity is Greek and my grandma's ethnicity is Polish. So also two countries that have suffered a lot throughout the years in history. And I feel like in a way, even though that's history that didn't touch us because we were not alive, but genetically and on the informational level and on biological level, certain things are transmitted, believe it or not, from our ancestors. So,
That's a wonderful cultural, you've got a wonderful cultural heritage from which to draw from for your art.
Thank you. I think so too. I wish I knew more about it, but unfortunately I don't even have anyone to ask anymore.
Yeah. I think a lot of us are in that position, unfortunately. And I think we just got to be grateful for the fact that we come from this diaspora of people that live differently to us, but their blood flows through our veins, and it's just up to us to tap into that heritage. And
I am definitely, because back then when our parents and grandparents were trying to have a career or a family, they were all suppressed a lot. And this suppression throughout history, whether for the language barrier or the color of the skin or the age differences or the religion or politic differences, somehow they are always present, even here now. Like, look what our planet is going through now. What is going to be the genetic information on the biological and physical and energetical level that is going to transmit to the children of the next generation? I don't know. I'm not even going to take responsibility, to be honest.
That's fair enough too. Yep, that's fair enough too. So for you, what do you hope the next phase or next epoch in your career holds?
Well, it is kind of happening already. We were really trying hard to expand the territorial routes of touring. And this year we are doing Australian tour for the first time. And we are working very hard to have some Latin America runs right after, which is another place we have never visited. You know, it's just quite difficult for certain citizens of Moldova to have certain visas, certain paperwork. Another thing that not many people know, we have to go through, you know, I just had an interview before you, and the guy was super sweet. And he's like, oh my God, I thought we'd just tell you, come over here. And you just be like, oh yeah, hell yeah. Take the airplane and you're there. It's not that easy, you know, and people don't make it easier for the musicians, for sure. But it is doable, and we are very stubborn. So we are hoping that slowly we will expand even more. We would like to visit Asia and, you know, everywhere really possible.
Yeah, I first heard about you through my mate who does, he's a fella in New York, but he's originally from Russia, bald-headed metal, he goes by, Benjamin, can't remember his surname now, but he's a Jewish fella now living in New York, and he was raving about you guys, and that was about 2 or 3 years ago now. So do you find that the more you tour, the more fans you gain, or is it more internet-based?
It is both. For sure, both, and they are both just as important. And one without the other will not work. They work together as well. So the more you tour, the more exposure you have online, and the more exposure you have online, the more there's possibilities for touring because people ask for it, right? So they are equally important. And if you choose this career path, it will help you a lot if you are on point with your social media. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of time. Mm. It takes time to learn it. It takes time to figure it out. And it takes time to create these, you know, posts, events, videos, everything. Because nowadays, everybody has such high quality and you want to be up there with the standards, you know. So the people's attention is caught by something that is good quality, that is sounds good, hopefully, you know, and they want to come and hear you live.
Mm. Have you been to Australia before?
No, unfortunately, never. For the same reason I just mentioned, it's not that easy, but I am so excited. I'm so excited.
Have you got much mail from us over the years?
Much what? I'm sorry?
Emails, social media.
Oh, yeah, a lot, of course. Yes, and fans that would constantly, you know, make sure that we know that they are there in Australia waiting.
Hmm. The arrangement with Cradle of Filth, did that come about through Dez?
Through Dez, you say?
Yeah.
Yes. Our management company, Oracle Management, is their management. So it's quite fresh for us. We just started working with them in the beginning of this year. And yeah, they thought, everybody at the management thought that would be a good, you know, mix to have for a tour. So not right away, but they made it happen. So I'm super excited. And I hope that, you know, Cradle of Filth will feel just as pleasant in our you know, presence, and we are very excited, honestly. It's a great band, and it's a great country that we really wanted to visit.
Next time you tour, I think the tables will be turned and you'll be headlining and they'll be supporting you, such as your ascendancy.
It is possible. I mean, I didn't know you were a musician.
Yeah. I've actually, I play every weekend. I play covers and I'm learning. I do sing a lot, but now I'm becoming a frontman. So I'm actually singing all of these, I guess you call them classic metal and rock songs from Wasp and Iron Maiden and Ozzy Osbourne. And that's the stuff I like, you see. And
Hell yeah. I like that too.
Yeah. I've gone from playing a lot of funk, a lot of disco music, because that's the stuff you got to play in pubs and clubs here in the world, you know. But it's very enjoyable being a musician. I enjoy it. It's probably the thing that I enjoy the most out of everything that I do. I've got kids and I'm married. So outside of my family, you know, it's probably the most important thing. But as you know, singing can be difficult. It takes a lot of practice and patience.
Oh, yeah. Every single time we are done with the tour and I go home, obviously I take a break mentally and physically from my own music, not from music in general, right? And then I start rehearsing just so I keep the muscles constantly trained. And when I'm just rehearsing and practicing and doing my vocal exercises, I still, every time to me, it's like, How do I do it on tour? When you're on stage, it's almost like a super version of yourself takes over. And that's the amazing and the magic part of it, right? And to me, it's so cleansing, it's so therapeutic that it doesn't matter how hard I have to work. To do that, I will work even triple if needed, because I need to play shows, I need to create music, I need to be able to have this outlet of emotion for my own mental sanity.
I get it, I bet. Yeah. How did you learn to sing? Did you take lessons early on?
I took lessons when we created the band. I took lessons with the local University of Music. There was a vocal teacher that was highly suggested to me. And I was training with her for 3 years religiously. And then I did a lot of research by myself. And then eventually I discovered Melissa Cross. And she is my vocal teacher. She's my mentor. And she's my best friend till this day. And I try to learn as much as possible from her because she's pure magic.
Would you offer or do you offer vocal coaching over Skype or Zoom?
I actually don't offer them for one specific reason. I'm not as confident when it comes to teaching because I don't think that I have enough knowledge. And, you know, that also would have taken a lot of my time from like being home and being able to do other things that make you happy. It's like an extra, it's like a side job, which for people, especially that feel super confident to teach, is great if that's what you do, you know. But I prefer to concentrate mainly on the promotion of the band, on answering. I answer every single DM on my Instagram. It takes time. I do a lot of interviews. I rarely refuse interviews, no matter how big the source that is interviewing me is. I think that if I'm not going to put that work into music, who's going to do it? So I just embrace it as my job, part of my job. And I just do a lot of that. And I try to also, like I told you prior, I try to stay in shape when I'm home as well. So I feel like maybe that's just a fear of mine that I'm not going to have enough time to breathe. And I feel like having a good balance between work and personal life is very important. Otherwise, we are going to start hating our job. We're going to start going crazy out of our mind. So I'm trying my best, at least when I'm home, to balance my work and personal life. On tour, you can balance. It's all full work all the time, 24/7. It's not just the 1 hour you're on the stage, you know, or the 2 hour, whatever. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, look, thanks very much for your time. I'll let you get back to it. But Lena, look, you're the real deal. Thank you very much for the conversation.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll see you at shows, yes, in September.
Lena Scissorhands, ladies and gentlemen, from Infected Rain. Not many around like her. No, there is not. Fantastic. All right, that's it from me. There are many more conversations just like that one over at, well, similar anyway, over at scarsandguitars.com if you like Morbid Angel, Cradle of Filth, Megadeth, all of the classics, Death, Obituary, Deicide, plenty of chats over there just waiting for you. Just waiting for you, indeed. All right. My name's Andrew Mackay-Smith, and I'm the host of the Scars and Guitars podcast. Until the next one, it's a very goodbye for now.